Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from our studio in Lake Wissota on this Monday, October 10th, 2022. 29 days until Election Day. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zomers is here as well in the producer chair. Coming up this morning, State Senator Chris Larson on the many state issues that we can talk about to kick off the week. We'll also review the Friday night debate between Senator Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, with plenty of clips that we will break down for you as they talked about various issues. We will try to make sense of what's behind a rise of outright racism coming from people who don't even feel the need to cloak themselves in white hoods and robes anymore, believing that their size and their media network shields them from accountability, much less shame or any Christian decency. And that's not even counting the depressingly high number of people in social media comment sections today disparaging this Indigenous Peoples Day. So let me start the week by offering up a pro tip. If your response to a post honoring our Native brothers and sisters and neighbors is to offer up a sarcastic Happy Columbus Day, you're not being cute, you're not being funny, and you're not really defending folks of Italian heritage the way you think you are. But back to the holiday, no mail service, and some businesses and services will take today off. So take a moment and be thankful for all the people who make up our nation today without unnecessarily sugarcoating everything that led us to where we are today. To reach the show by email, our address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com or phone number 715-388-7155. The Packers' first game in London was, shall we say, a royal mess, losing 27-22 before a crowd of more than 61,000 people, setting an NFL record for London at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Packers had a lead early on. Things just really fell apart in the second half. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon were thoroughly underutilized. Aaron Rodgers' passing was not what he thought that he was capable of, let's put it that way. I mean, the last time the Packers lost a game when they were favored by at least 9 points was when the Packers lost in week 13 of 2008, and Mike McCarthy was fired shortly after that. Rodgers said afterwards he didn't like the talk in the locker room, which included some comments alluding to how we've got a couple of good running backs and they weren't used nearly enough, and the passing just didn't turn out the way that it should. And as you know, I won't hesitate to critique the extremely well-paid first ballot Hall of Famer in simply saying, pick your targets better and trust your runners. But anyway, the team jumped out to a 17-3 lead. And was mighty fun if you were in one of the many watering holes around Wisconsin that got up and at them earlier than usual. It's always weird to see, you know, one of our favorite taverns suddenly switch to a breakfast buffet, but they managed to pull it off. And, you know, we led it 20-10 at halftime. But it just fell apart in the end. And somehow New York Giants quarterback Daniel Jones was able to pass and run almost at will. There were some costly defensive penalties. And so now defensive coordinator Joe Barry and many other folks will be on the hot seat throughout the course of this week now that they come back to the States. The Badger football team, on the other hand, had a better weekend, beating up on hapless Northwestern 42-7. But the road doesn't get any easier for the Badgers. They travel to Michigan State for a game next Saturday at 3 o'clock. And while the Brewers are out of it, one of your favorite baseball fans here continues to follow the playoffs, especially this new wild card format, which was interesting because I think a lot of folks thought it might be a little skewed because instead of a one game, essentially sudden death playoff for the wild card teams, they made it three wild card teams and set up brackets. And the wild card round was a best of three, but all three games were at the same stadium, the team with the better record. And yet, despite that setup, in the four rounds, three of the winners were the visiting teams. The Phillies clinched by winning two in a row at St. Louis. Seattle went all the way to Toronto, won two in a row. San Diego went all the way to New York and beat the Mets. That's the only one that needed all three games to decide it. The Cleveland Guardians were the only home team to come out of the wild card round, winning two games to none. And now their reward is they get to take on the New York Yankees. So that next round of brackets is all set. We'll maybe review that later on for the divisional series that starts tomorrow. Otherwise, I hope everybody had a good weekend. For us, as I mentioned, Friday, it did involve a road trip down to La Crosse and enjoying the gorgeous fall colors along the way before having a dinner with a family member who's attending school down there. Great little dinner at the Freight House, always a nice historic place to sit at. For us, no visit to downtown La Crosse is complete without hitting up the Starlight Lounge, though I will never quite understand whose idea it was to put a martini bar at the top of a steep, narrow staircase, but it's still there, so it tells me things have worked out all right so far. And then we finally checked out Ishnala, the supper club by Wisconsin Dells. For those folks watching on the video feed, big fan of a couple of these supper club books, and so we continued to take a tour around Wisconsin and learn more about some of the great supper clubs in our state. State Senator Chris Larson, coming up after this break. You're up north. Well, we are in for a warmer than usual today and tomorrow, but that's ahead of a cold front that's coming in. So because of that, we're getting all kinds of southerly air pumped into the area just to prime things for when that cold front comes through on Tuesday or early Wednesday over in the eastern part of the state. And then there's going to be a big cool down again, but we'll at least see the 70s one more time as we swing into this early week of October. We're joined now from the Milwaukee area by State Senator Chris Larson. Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Yeah, happy to have a little bit of warmer weather for, even if it's just for a couple days.
Well, especially for those folks who are doing door knocking, and there is definitely no shortage of that this time of year. I have to say I enjoy seeing the posts because it can be, you know, one of the best parts of the job, frankly. There's, you know, for all the negativeness out there, negativity out there, there's still a lot of great people that you get to meet.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say yesterday, you know, yesterday was a little bit tough, mostly because, not necessarily because of our candidates or anything. It was, it's always tougher, as you know, Pat, to knock on doors after a Packers loss. But, you know, although this one, it was pretty clear the things that we could point at, the collapse in the second half, you know, and then you were just, that they couldn't do a rushing play to save their life.
Right.
But yeah, the doors, you know, after commiserating on that, talking to people on doors, people are very excited about our candidates, and time after time, they're falling our way. So, yeah, it was beautiful weather to go out there with. And yesterday was with Lulu Bird in the 82nd district.
Yes. Oh, she's delightful.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Absolutely. I mean, somebody who's, you know, bringing music into it on a regular basis, of having concerts. And yeah, just the conversations that she has. She was delighted when she came back from her doors and she got one of her signs in. You know, you see those full lineups of all the lawn signs of one particular party or another. Well, she got hers mixed in with all of the Republicans because this guy was just done. He was done with all the Republican candidates. He had been just that solid lock, and this is the first time where he's switching over. They had just gone too far. So,
yeah, I don't doubt that a bit. And I hear the same thing from people over in the 3rd congressional district who are looking at Derek Van Orden, you know, who was insurrection adjacent, and deciding that is a bridge too far for them. There's also that fatigue factor that sets in with folks. You know, Scott Walker after 8 years, Ron Johnson after 12 years. Yeah. And while, again, all of these races are close, I mean, every visit with a voter, almost every day that you're doing that, you do find people that say, I lean, you know, Republican, but, you know, this guy or this, whatever this is, it's too much. It's time for a change.
Yeah. Yeah. And if people have been paying attention, especially for Ron Johnson, I think they're kind of done. You know, it, all it takes, it's his kryptonite right now is just anybody who asks the question, what has he done for the last 12 years? Right. And he can complain. He's like the guy who walks into a fast food restaurant and complains, but has zero solutions. Right. If he was actually put in charge, in his case, he's been in charge for 12 years. And his solutions at the end of that, I think his biggest thing that he tried to do is try to rip healthcare away from people by eliminating the Affordability Act, Healthcare Affordability Act, Obamacare. And now he's not even talking about that. That would have been one of his biggest accomplishments, is trying to be able to do that. Everything else that he complains about, global inflation, or talking about crime, or talking about cashless or cash-free bail, all those things at the federal level, he has done nothing on. In fact, he has gone in the opposite direction by defunding how our government works, so making it harder to actually enforce laws. On issue after issue, he decided to vote against the Inflation Adjustment Act, right? Which would have actually helped people at a time of need. So, in fact, he voted to make it even worse, right? When he voted for the Trump tax cuts that gave him doubling his wealth through this tax pass-through and gave a huge benefit to his big donors. So I think the story's pretty written on them, which is why I think they're just trying to obfuscate by trying to scare voters. You know, 'tis the season. I always find it funny that Halloween comes right before Election Day. You know, if you're watching too much TV, it's hard to tell which one's scarier.
It really is. And this year, especially for reasons we've covered before, with the, you know, the potential for the first black man being elected U.S. Senator, and the ugly emphasis on crime and you know, misrepresenting the position on having cash free bail, so that you can actually judge somebody by their security risk rather than how much money that they have in their pocket. I didn't watch the debate live, but as I looked back over the weekend, I was not surprised, and I'm not surprised to hear you say that Senator Johnson did not have really much of anything to point to as saying, you know, look what I did. And I think Lieutenant Governor Barnes was able in, you know, multiple issues to make the case of how, you know, the senator doesn't so much have a record to run on. I guess the one that really stuck with me, and we're going to play clips later in the show, though, was the way that Senator Johnson is trying to have it both ways on Social Security and Medicare, saying that, you know, his priority is to strengthen it. He never said that he was going to, you know, cut it. Well, no, you never have to say you're going to cut it if you simply say, you know, let's treat it as discretionary spending, which means it's going to be considered for cuts every single year. And I admired Jill Geisler very much, the moderator of the debate. I know her, longtime news anchor at Channel 6 in Milwaukee. She's first class. But, you know, the format didn't really let her press Johnson on the way he tried to have it both ways, when we know which way he comes down on that very important issue for Wisconsinites.
Right. And that is one, and that's not even an old position of his. That's one that he has reiterated time and again about how he's referred to Social Security as a Ponzi scheme. This is somebody who, you know, has the comfort of flying in a private jet. This is somebody who lives very well, living in a large mansion, one of the richest Wisconsinites and one of the sixth richest U.S. senators, which is an institution that's notoriously very rich. So for him, Social Security is not something that's even in the formula for him having to worry about his retirement. But for the rest of us and for the rest of our neighbors, that's huge. So he may not think of it as a big deal. He may think of it as something for people in poverty. But unfortunately, because of policies by him and his party, we don't have a majority of millionaires living in the state of Wisconsin, right? And so people rely on Social Security. So him putting it on the chopping block time and again means that it's going to be subject to debate. It's going to be only subject to cuts if it's up to him, and that's pretty dangerous. I mean, it's a pretty motivating voting message for people out there who are, if they need another one.
State Senator Chris Larson is with us, and I don't want to. I'm not going to spend all this time on the debate. I just happened to, to mention that it was on Friday, and I went off on one tangent here. Let's get back towards state issues and things that you're working on in the legislature. Sure. Although I'm going to start with one that did come up in the debate as well, and that is, you know, Senator Johnson saying he wants a public referendum on abortion, and yet Governor Evers said, fine, let's do that. He called a special session, and of course, the, you know, the legislature, the Republican leadership of it, you know, did nothing. Chris, if anything that took place during that episode with the special session, was there anything that surprised you about how the Republicans handled the whole matter?
This is, I mean, they're looking to set land speed records, it seems like, Pat, of how fast they can avoid this hot potato that they themselves cooked up, right? This is the Supreme Court that they wanted. They came up with an issue and suddenly kicked it back to the states and said abortion is illegal in the state of Wisconsin, right? Going back to 1849. This is, by my count, third time this year. We tried to bring this up earlier in the session before we adjourned. They refused. The governor brought it up in a special session earlier, actually the day before the June 24th Dobbs ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. Republicans were in for 10 seconds, and then this time, similarly, they refused to debate it. They refused to bring it up. And so all you can deduce from that is, you know, ignoring what they're saying, but looking at their actions, they are fine with where our law is right now, which means that there are no exceptions for rape. There are no exceptions for incest, and doctors would be punished if they perform a routine medical procedure, especially in the case for women who are in dire need of it. That's where we are, and they refuse to change it. So I think that's a position, you know, as much as there's all these hypotheticals that they're throwing out there of what could happen in the future on all these other issues, that is one where overnight, half of Wisconsinites became second-class citizens, and we have had the ability to remedy it, and they are refusing. So it is, unfortunately, we're not like Kansas where you can actually have a referendum on the ballot. Ron Johnson knows that. He's smart enough to know that. So they are not going to go the route that he is suggesting. And even if they were, they had the opportunity last week. They slammed the door in his face. So he's trying to have it both ways. The only way that this is on the ballot now as a referendum is by who's going to be in the state legislature and nationally, and actually federally, right, nationally, with whether Ron Johnson is allowed to stay there. And this is somebody who voted against or voted for a nationwide abortion ban with no exceptions, not once, not twice, but seven times. So his record is pretty clear. As much as he might try and run away from it, we know where he's coming from.
Senator, the conditions in Wisconsin are already draconian with the 1849 law on the books. But if Tim Michaels were to win the governor's race and Republicans were to win those couple more seats needed to create a supermajority in the legislature, where even if Evers won, they could pass bills, what could Wisconsin look like in the next year or so with a new Republican legislature or a new governor?
Well, if we're able to have a governor that continues to fight for women's right to choose, that means we will not be enforcing the abortion ban in the state, which is something that Evers and Josh Call has said there are better things for law enforcement to be doing. And I think in a election where there is so much tendency right now to talk about law enforcement, I don't think it's a popular position to be able to say our overworked police should be spending their time chasing down women and investigating their menstrual cycles. But that is what Tim Michaels, it seems, is interested in doing and is run for governor. Not only is that, you know, just something that's possible, that's something that he helped fund as a donation from his corporation, where they donated to a group that was tracking women's menstrual cycles. So that's the clear contrast. By having Evers there, it protects us from sliding even worse. Now, to actually shift it, to actually move the legislature, you have to get a majority, which right now is wildly tough with the way that they rig gerrymandering. Right now, they are very proud of how much they are out of step with the majority of Wisconsinites. And in this case, this is a 70% issue, right? I think the only issue that's polling higher is marijuana legalization, something that Democrats are on the right side of, Republicans are on the wrong side of again. But people got to get out and vote. We got to change that.
I mean, we're looking at potential attacks on just, like, say, the availability of contraception or sex education or you know, a host of other issues that could come up in the state if Tim Michaels were to be elected governor, or if Governor Evers were elected, but say Josh Call, you know, was unseated and there was a supermajority in the legislature. And we're going to talk more about these issues with State Senator Chris Larson coming up after this commercial break. First, a reminder that if you'd like to get our daily newsletter, go to upnorthnewswi.com, click on newsletter in the top banner, and be part of our subscriber base there. We'll be back after this. You're Up North.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, a little reminder, if you want to get in touch with the show, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. State Senator Chris Larson joins us, Democrat from Milwaukee. And so many topics we have yet to get into in our time together here. But I will tell you, Senator, what caught my attention several days back and made me want to have you on was when you, among others, tried to bring attention back to a very serious topic for democracy. And that is Donald Trump's plot to basically have create slates of fake electors, have them fill out fraudulent paperwork, and then had the plan worked, have Vice President Mike Pence recognize them, recognize ballots, one of which would have been delivered by Senator Ron Johnson. And so little has been done on this. In my mind, not nearly enough. And you right. tried to kind of jumpstart that process. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, from a broad perspective, it seems to be the excuse that's made by, you know, Derek Van Orden and Ron Johnson and a lot of these people who tried to overturn the election results is, you know, well, it wasn't successful, so we should, you know, get a mulligan on this one. We should get a pass. And the reality is, well, yes, if they had been successful, then there would be no way to hold them accountable because they would be in charge of a very despotic government, right? And so because they failed, they feel like that should be the excuse that they should not be held accountable. And in the case of Ron Johnson, he's trying to use the what I've seen called the 5-second rule, right? Which most parents have. When you drop something on the ground, you can still eat it after 5 seconds. Well, that doesn't work for democracy, that just because you were involved or you claim to have only been involved or were caught being involved for 5 seconds, that doesn't mean, that doesn't extinguish the gravity of what you tried to do in overturning a democratic election, right? Trying to throw out the voters' will across Wisconsin by trying to hand shove a envelope of fake fraudulent electors to Mike Pence on January 6th. So as we've seen in open daylight, as much as Ron Johnson tries to play down what happened that day, it's clear that there was wrongdoing done. But that didn't just happen there. It happened within our Capitol, too, on December 14th, the day that the Democratic electors got together in the governor's office and cast their 10 electoral college. Elsewhere in the building, 10 fake electors from the Republican side had got together and tried to overturn the election literally hours after the state Supreme Court said, this is settled. There is no recourse in the law anymore. They still tried to move forward with that. And those 10 folks have not been held accountable. In other states, folks who did the exact same thing are being held accountable. So what we did, we've been trying to push for the state attorney general to pursue it. He has said that it's not within his jurisdiction. So now we've been pushing for, there's another group that pushed for the Milwaukee district attorney. He declined. And now we're trying to push the Dane County district attorney, Ishmael Ozan, to investigate because this is something that happened within his jurisdiction. And frankly, has graver consequences of any other crime than any other crime that I can even imagine of trying to completely extinguish the spirit of America by substituting your own will in.
You talk about hot potato with the abortion issue. I sometimes feel this has become a hot potato as well. You know, starting with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and there are good people serving on there, but the
frankly, the refusal to take up the issue, saying it may not be in their jurisdiction, or they didn't see initially that there was any ill intent, but that was long before we've learned what the January 6th committee has since learned. And I don't have the answers to this either, other than to, like you said, at least look for the next person who might be willing to accept that hot potato to bring that long overdue accountability to this issue.
Yeah, and there is, that's the, you know, there's, in my eyes, and the way that the criminal justice system should work, one, you know, it's to punish those who are unrepentant and will cause further harm, right? And to punish them and keep them separate from a community that can follow the law and follow the rules. And the second is a deterrent. And in both cases, neither of those lessons have been learned, right? In that, even trying to ask some of the Republicans if they would do this again, they hold that door open, right? To be able to try and attempt this again as a future possibility. And if they're not held accountable, that'll just become the new standard, right? To be able to say, oh, well, we can just not accept the election results and we can try and throw out as many votes as we need to until we get the outcome that we want. And in the case of holding these specific individuals accountable, it seems like most of them are unrepentant and not accounting, not being held accountable for their role in the lead up to the January 6th insurrection and to all these efforts nationwide that tried to overturn American democracy. And it is, you know, for the future of our country, it's not a given, right? We hold the torch in our hands right now that was handed to us by previous generations who kept this democracy going. But there is no guarantee that that lantern does not get extinguished in our generation. We have to fight because there's people who are looking to do it and insert their own will. So it's unprecedented. So I get for law enforcement, for the district attorney, that it's a new thing to try and figure out, not something he's definitely interested in. But if we don't, then the future of it doesn't matter. And especially considering that we have a candidate for governor who is openly flirting with the idea of removing democratically elected district attorneys, as has been done in Florida, the chance right now is pretty limited. If they don't do it now, they may lose that. They may be removed, and we may continue to see our democracy backslide.
State Senator Chris Larson joins us on this Monday morning on Up North News. Speaking of Michaels, let's turn to the state budget. And that is a process that is already underway behind the scenes, even though the legislature won't be back in session until January. And then by July 1st of next year, has to pass a state spending plan for the 2 years to follow. And Tim Michaels said a few days back that he'd like to see a flat income tax and that he'd like to make sure that nobody's taxes are raised, which, of course, if you read between the lines, means we want to lower we want a flat tax rate at the lowest bracket right now. So everybody, no matter how rich, how poor, pays the same, 3.4 or 3.7%, something like that. Senator, what would that mean to have a flat income tax at that level in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, the first thing, and this may shock you, the first thing that it would guarantee is that everybody who is rich in our state, people who are doing the best, they would get a huge windfall tax break. So what would that look like? That would mean for those folks who are making more than $500,000, they would see a tax decrease. That is in the case of 97% of them by the math that we did. So that's the first thing. The people who are earning between $20,000 and $300,000, which is I assume most of our listeners, it includes a lot of us, you would experience a tax increase. And so it would really shift the burden of who is funding our government from the rich, where right now they've continued to get tax breaks for the last 40 years. And this would shift it in almost entirely to be spread evenly based off of nothing other than everyone has to pay this. And the richest would be able to run away with the most. So we're going to have a more detailed analysis of this. The other piece of it too was, you know, Pat, would mean that it would bankrupt the way the government works. And so for those who are worried about law enforcement, it would defund law enforcement. If you're worried about the future of public education, this would, on a broad scale, defund public education across the state. Corrections and universities, which are the other two biggest line items in a state budget, those things would be decreased. So this is what it would look like, is we'd be starved further for revenue and be able to function as a state and be able to do those big things that Wisconsin is known for that, frankly, we can't do on our own. The communities can't do on our own. So it may seem like something that's wonky and doesn't affect most people. But what it would do is it would basically defund Wisconsin.
And our first, you know, at first instinct was, well, I suppose the local government, to make up for that, will have to increase property taxes on everybody. But no, because we still have those property tax limits. So you really are just talking, the only option is to decimate local services.
That's it. Yeah, they're shackled. I mean, they're mm-hmm. Anytime I run into one of my school superintendents, they're always nudging, because they're saying, look, we have to go to referendum again. And right now, to the tune across the state, there's over $2 billion on the ballot this November for referendum. And many of those are just to try and get by because of funding that was cut from the state. They don't have the ability to increase it beyond growth, which is something they were shackled by Scott Walker, where they wanted to just kind of smother slowly K-12 education. But then beyond that, the shared revenue isn't getting shared. This last budget cycle, they gave two zeros, $0 per pupil increase for both years, and said, we'll use the emergency funds to be able to fund your schools. And if you can't, go to referendum. So what that looks like is, imagine if your house was on fire and the fire department came and they put it out, thankfully. But then after they pulled away, you know, let's say a month later, you turn on your faucet to try and boil some water for dinner and the water won't run. You call up and say, well, what the heck happened? And if they said, well, you used your 2 years allocation of water on that emergency. That's what the state government did. They said, well, you got these emergency funds, use those to pay for your teachers, use those for the needs in the classrooms. That money was spent. And at the same time, the state kept the extra, where they're sitting right now, Pat, on $5.2 billion. So these local schools have to go to referendum to try and pay for it. In the meantime, the state is sitting on this pile of cash. That's what's happening with K-12 education in the state. And that's just one example of where there's a huge divergence in where Governor Evers is and where Tim Michaels would want to be in the future of our budget. And it changes the entire spirit of Wisconsin. You think of those things that really make Wisconsin, Wisconsin, strong K-12 education, right? That's right up there. And they're trying to fundamentally change that.
And the win-win is right there. There's a $5 billion surplus. There's more than $2 billion in higher property taxes through school referenda on the ballot. You don't have to be a math whiz to see how the legislature could come together and fund local services adequately and still have some left over for whatever, you know, corporate tax breaks they want to provide or whatnot. Senator, in the 2 minutes that we have left, let's just touch on climate briefly here, because again, it's something where we're seeing leadership from the Biden administration and the Inflation Reduction Act and such, mm-hmm. and yet we still see, you know, just derision and sarcasm and you know, dismissal from Republicans on climate issues at the state level. Is there any reason to believe that a Tim Michaels win with a Republican controlled legislature would have any positive impact on the fight against the changing climate?
No, not at all. I think that there is actually more of a worry that you may end up having a Scott Walker style blocking of projects, right? Where there's an influx of money that was passed at the federal level. And we saw what happened 10 years ago, where just for political points, Scott Walker turned down $800 million in infrastructure because he didn't like the nature of the project. With what's happening at the federal level, the groundswell is built. And it's not because government wants it. It's because people want it. They recognize the grave threat that is climate change to our state. I mean, we saw it last month over the 2-day rain spell, right, in the middle of September. We're seeing these floods. We want to be able to make sure that we're addressing it in a meaningful way. So those a lot of those projects are already coming through. But for the state to actually step up and do it, we're in the lower quarter in terms of where our climate of moving towards renewable energy, which holds back our state. And then beyond that, we are in the top quarter for how much we pay for our energy, which doesn't make much sense. That would only continue under Tim Michels. It would be a disaster.
State Senator Chris Larson, we sure appreciate your time. Thank you so much for that. And good luck. Thanks for helping folks out on the doors. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Good to see you, Pat. Have a good one.
You bet, Chris. Thank you. All right. We will wrap up this hour's conversation right after this. You're up, North. Welcome back. Follow what we do on social media. Just search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I think Christina's putting stuff up on TikTok now. So we just continue to grow and grow. Meanwhile, I think a lot of folks had a very interesting Sunday morning for the Packer game in London because it was the first time. We are the 32nd and final team to play a game there as part of an NFL outreach, which also this year includes Germany and in the past has included Mexico City, where I think the Packers have played a preseason game. But this was the first regular season game there. And I talked earlier about, you know, places that normally just serve, you know, pizza and, you know, cheese curds and, you know, chicken having to adjust into a breakfast buffet. The one I was at did a pretty nice job. And I was curious, and Aaron, you're curious as well about the attire and whether folks would show up, you know, because some places did advertise that they were doing a pajama party theme. Aaron, you're telling me that there was no such theme for you, or you were, in your case, it was the other way around. You were in your pajamas, but there was no game.
Correct. I woke up that morning, and normally my roommates are the ones advocating for playing games of any sport on the TV, and they were still asleep because they had stayed out too late. So I went back to bed and completely forgot about it.
See, now we wondered about that when we were out Saturday night as we were watching some people, you know, we were heading home, other people were still out, and we wondered how many of them would then have the quick turnaround and be there for kickoff. And clearly in your case, at your place, they did not make it. They too much ha-ha led to boo-hoo the next morning, and there was no go pack go for them.
Yeah, definitely not this time.
In the place where I was too, yeah, there was nobody that was very stylish in their pajamas. Now a lot of us went in sweatpants, and that was probably the closest we went to tipping our cap in that. And then, you know, a lot of all the usual Packer attire. And then, you know, the difference at, you know, this particular bar was rather than a lot of your usual old fashions, for example, you saw certainly more than a few Bloody Marys and, let's see, what else? Screwdrivers, no mimosas. The place I was at wasn't serving up champagne as far as I could tell. And, you know, it's Sunday morning. So, of course, there's beer in Wisconsin. And I think many people were passing around a photo on social media of a fan in London who noted that, you know, the hotel where they were at, it took only 1.5 days for Wisconsinites to drink the entire bar out of beer, which is, you know, just kind of how we roll in Wisconsin for both good and for bad. And it was probably necessary later in the game since, as we mentioned earlier, I think one person put it well, noting Aaron Rodgers had 39 passes, whereas between the two of them, Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon only had 19 carries. And this person noted that it's frankly irresponsible at this point for Rodgers to throw 20 more passes than Jones and Dylan have carries. And I was going to crack a joke at some point as to whether is the air thinner in London, because obviously Aaron Rodgers throws incompletions, you know, he's only human, but so many of them were overthrown yesterday by more than usual that I was starting to think maybe the air is thinner there, which would have been a valid comment for, say, a Mexico City game, but not for this one. But it will lead to, I guess, some kind of adjustment, which also means that, you know, our opponents can make adjustments in terms of defending against the run. So we'll want to be on the lookout for that in the next game. And then as Senator Chris Larson noted after the game, folks who are running for office and all of their supporters were back out knocking doors, which was actually a bonus day for them, a little peek behind the scenes as a candidate or working for a campaign. You're knocking on doors all the time in the weeks leading up to an election, except for one period. And that period is during a Green Bay Packers game. You just don't. I mean, maybe somebody does, but they're doing it against any good advice out there. You take that 3 hours off, catch up on your paperwork, or actually at this point you're putting up lawn signs. You're just out there, and I saw a picture of my friend Jeff Smith out there, you know, with a post hole digger, you know, just putting in posts and putting up signs, which is really something that's necessary to do at this point. Anything else but with you know, a game at 8:30 in the morning and having it being done by noon, well, that left the day open to get back on those doors. And I've said plenty of times, and I'll continue to say, even though some folks might find this hard to believe, knocking on doors really is the most pleasant part of the job. It's not 100% pleasant. Don't get me wrong. There, as we're learning, and as we'll continue to learn through the rest of this morning, there are some people out there that could charitably be described as a jerk face. They're there. Senator Jeff Smith, we talked about that with his last visit. He has those pop-up, you know, stop-and-talk listening sessions where he just pulls his truck off the road someplace where people can park. He puts up a big sign, stop and talk with your state senator, Jeff Smith. And he says, you know, by and large, those conversations are very nice, or at least they started that way. But then sometime after the 2020 election, there would be people that wanted to pull over, you know, just to come yell at him about, you know, a stolen election that wasn't stolen, but folks can get mighty hostile that way. But that said, people are still, by and large, good, nice, kind, civil people who enjoy talking to another person. Yeah, you get the occasional person that, you know, just doesn't want to talk, takes the information and says thank you. But again, a little note behind the scenes here. When you pick the addresses of the doors that you knock on in a campaign, by and large, you don't knock on every door. You have what's called a voter file, which is a big database of every registered voter, because anybody can purchase the list of registered voters in Wisconsin. It costs a lot of money, but you can do it. And that, of course, is what parties and campaigns do. They put it in a database, and then they put another database in there of things based on public opinion polls or surveys or what have you, to try to figure out, you know, if this person is, and they rank them this way: strong Democrat, leaning Democrat, strong Republican, leaning Republican, or moderate or unknown. And by and large, when you're knocking on those doors, you're knocking on those folks who are in the middle, trying to get a feel for if they will, you know, be a supporter or not. And you might be surprised how many of those folks really appreciate a visit from somebody that can answer their questions and put a human face on a campaign. And that's what you heard Chris Larson say, is by and large, you win a lot of folks over who simply wanted a real live person to talk to, and they appreciate the visit. We'll have more in our next hour about the Ron Johnson-Mandela Barnes debate next. You're up north.